Okay, so just initially, one of the retreatants, could you please go through what mantras you need for 3 days at your father's place? So what I did there was when I was helping him out with his computer connections and whatnot, Wi-Fi, and his accounts and stuff. I just used a very simple one, which was Sankor. And I mean, I used that one for many, many years, but the thing is that you'd be better off using the Anicca principle because it's got more oomph behind it. It's got more, more energy, a little bit more power, say, like letting go. And because the thing is, when you're practicing Dhamma, you need to try to keep your mind actually in line with the teaching. You can meditate, you know, almost any way that you like to a degree, as long as you're following the major guidelines. But it's good to keep your mind, say, in line with, like reality principles, with the actual things that the Buddha was talking about when he talks about, balancing faculties and, without getting overly complicated, but, 37 enlightenment factors, there's a number of different aspects there, but whatever you feel comfortable when it comes to the Anicca principle, you can just, just very, very, very little short ones. Like, it could be things like even to say energy is changeable, or it could be absolutely anything whatsoever you think about. Just keep, initially, like, it's good to, say outside, when you're at work or when you're around the family, I wouldn't do any of the body-based practices unless you're actually comfortable with it, because you've got a situation where you're doing these slightly more heavy, I wouldn't say abnormal, but they're not mainstream practices. And I mean, for myself, I hardly get any negativity or anything with them. But if you're in a situation where you're doing things like skeleton or teeth or nails, and you're living in a household with your partner or even with children and whatnot, it depends on your makeup. Because I know a Sri Lankan man who was doing the 32 parts of the body, and he was married with 3 young daughters, and he was quite comfortable with it, even within the household. There was no irritation, he wasn't getting irritated, annoyed by the kids. But it's good, something which is like user friendly, that you're comfortable with, and you're reasonably at peace with. You don't want, as one of the other ladies mentioned, you don't want to do anything which will basically provoke or stir you up or bring up very, very strong emotions. You want to do things which are user friendly, reasonably smooth, keep you in a comfortable range. And that you can do them, you can do them maybe in the beginning every couple of minutes, and then if you're able to, roughly every minute or so, right throughout the day. I would definitely use the changeability, because it's more reality based, and you'll tend to get better results with it than saying things like happiness or joy. You're using Pali, like particular Pali words, in relation with those particular mind states. So we have specific examples, as I've mentioned, anything within the natural world, biology, chemistry, natural sciences, anything that you see in the mind. But one of the ladies mentioned that, she was using this mantra, feeling is changeable. And then it brought up a response, a very like strong emotion, uncomfortable emotion. So it's not a bad thing. It really just makes you aware of what's suitable and what's not. Now, if you did things like the soft and fluffy. This is another point here. The soft and fluffy, which is that which is like easy to work with, which is not provocative, which doesn't give you any trouble. I mean, all meditations, if you do them enough, you start winding it up like, 6-8 hours a day, you're definitely going to get an effect. You're going to get an emotional psychological effect. You know, say Upasamo, Venerable Upasamo can do 8 hours a day and he maintains quite a good mind state, but once he starts bumping it up to, say, 10, which is a lot, on a daily basis in retreat time, then he starts to get a little bit irritated, sometimes annoyed if things, you know, if people, you know, sort of create problems for him. So, as you know, soft and fluffy, you know, like easy to work with, you're comfortable with it, and if that, you know, the soft and fluffy doesn't work so well, then you increase the pressure. You do things like just one body based mantra. It could be head hair, just one of those: head hair, body hair, nails, teeth, skin. And then you'll see the level of the tranquility effect, the ability to induce peacefulness will increase. So you go from natural, very comfortable things that you like, and then if it doesn't work, you don't get the results quick enough. If you don't see it within days, you know, it's like too long. So I wouldn't give it. If you're doing a particular mantra and you're doing it nothing less than 1 or 2 hours a day, and you do that for several hours a day, this one mantra per minute, and you really don't feel it's satisfactory, then just use a little bit more oomph, a little bit more, force with the body-based practices, just one. You know, keep yourself in a comfortable range, just one, and then give that a couple of days, and you definitely will see an effect without any doubt. And if you really want to see it roll, you do the five, but you've got to watch yourself. You've got to check the mind and make sure you don't get any kind of negativity. You don't see like things like anger. The monks go through this kind of stuff all the time, every day, you know, day after day. The emotional ups and downs and different moods and all the rest of it. But you really need to do what actually works for you, and you're in a comfortable range, and then you just keep it going for months, years on end, if you've got the ability. Tom recommended a topic called letting go, and you know, we see that a lot in especially in books, you know, books by Buddhist teaching, you know, by lay monastic Dharma teachers, letting go. But, you know, one of our ladies, her daughter passed away, you know, quite some time ago. I think it must have been the youngest daughter with three older brothers. So, you know, very, very emotionally, really traumatic. So that took about a full 12 months just to come to terms with. But as she said, she mentioned to me that, you know, people keep telling her to let go, but she didn't know how to let go. And you just can't drop your daughter, you know, even after 3 months, you know. It took me about 6 weeks to get over the worst of my father's death. So, you know, most people lead at least 12 months. Even one of the Sri Lankan young ladies from the monastery drops in now and then. You know, she lost her mum 2 years ago, and she's still grieving. So it all depends on your personal makeup, how sensitive you are, how close you are with mum and dad. What your meditation practice is like. Sometimes it can give you an ability to deal with things a little bit more easy, but it's not necessarily foolproof, because meditation does make you sensitive, emotionally sensitive. So it's very much a personal perspective, you know, that experience. But really, you know, especially with the Buddhist practitioners, after, I can only speak for myself. I mean, after a full year, if I was emotionally still a mess, you know, after 12 months, it means that I'm basically not doing the work correctly. I'm not getting maybe proper guidance, or I'm not practicing in the correct manner, because I still can't deal with that mind state. So if I've still got major issues after 1 year, the person may really need to look at what's happening. And because, you know, you can get these clinical professionals, people who specialise in grief and death, counsellors who are very, very good in this area, and they've seen it all. So that might be the kind of person you would refer to. So letting go can take, you know, if we look at, I mean, what how does it actually affect you? If I say letting go, what does it actually mean? So, you know, we can use, say, descriptions like letting go means, say, like non-attachment, non-clinging, the ability to sort of weather conditions, the ability to, accord with life's ups and downs, and, you know, not having a personality which is incredibly, like, stiff and tight, inflexible. You know, so it's a person who is, psychologically, they're not trying to, what's the right word? It's like the sense of self, in one way, doesn't become a problem, because if the sense of self is quite strong, then you're going to get your fingers burned at some point, because it's going to jump in and it's going to say, oh, this is not fair, or I should be treated better, or I should have more rights, or more preferences, or you know, I should be a millionaire, and all this kind of stuff. You know, the sense of self will, in a major way, will be the source of a lot of your both your joy and your suffering, your joy and pain as a human being. So what we're aiming at, I mean, especially with the monastics, you have to move away from extreme, you know, like extreme happiness, from extreme pain. The Buddha talked about bringing the mind back to the center point between, say, like indulgence and self-mortification, where you're just sort of like torturing yourself, or, you know, being in a state of like suffering on whatever level, you know, whatever induced that particular state. So, and the letting go, what's the test? You know, it's like if we put someone, you know, somebody feels that they've let go of this and that, you know, they've let go of, I saw an example the other day, one of the monks said that he had let go of his daughter, and I said I find that hard to believe. And because people can just talk the talk, it doesn't mean anything, really. You've got to put it to the test. So, and I said, how would you feel if your daughter passed away? And he said, I would hardly be affected. He said, we have this understanding that if one of us, you know, whichever one dies first, that the other will take care of the responsibilities and duties and look after the ceremony and whatnot. But the thing is, you can see quite clearly, I'm not being like, what's the right word? I can't think of the right word to describe it. So like critical for choice of better words. But the thing is that, you know, you can't really see how much a person has let go until they're under pressure, until you put them to the test. So, you know, if it's like somebody says, oh, I'm not attached to my, I've got a very nice phone. The phone's like $2,500, but I'm not really attached to it. Well, why don't we just take it away for 3 or 6 months and then we'll see how you feel about it. So, you know, you're looking at like extreme examples like that, but, you know, from my perspective, I don't go getting in people's faces and telling them this and telling them that. You know, it's not really my job. You know, people, you know, they have their own makeup, their own karma. All you can really do is lead by example. You can guide people. You can, you know, make an effort to be an example. But that's for myself. That's all I'm prepared to do. I'm not going to. You get some people who want to get in your face and they want to tell you this and tell you that, and you know, they get angry and they get revengeful and all this kind of stuff. But you just drive yourself nuts with that kind of approach, and it shows just how, no matter how smart they are, it shows just how much they've let go by just how they react when they're under just a little bit of pressure. Or if I deliberately provoke you, or stir you up, or I start pushing your buttons, and then you just go completely off the handle and start shouting in my face, then I know exactly how much you've let go of. So, you know, we're looking at extremes here. For me, I'm not interested in that kind of approach with people. People, they have to move at their own pace, their own speed. And for people who are in the abbot's position, you know, it's not an easy one. You have to deal with a lot of stuff, not just your own, but dozens and dozens and dozens of other people with multiple responsibilities. So if you're even if you're not particularly stable, or you might be can be quite hostile or even revengeful at times, that, you know, if you're able to hold that job together, the abbot's position, looking after a monastery and community, you know, I take my hat off to you, even though I don't particularly, I'm not particularly thrilled about your personality, certain aspects of your personality. So how do we develop it? How do I manage to develop a sense of letting go, of non-attachment? So that similar principle is coming up again. The sense of self. The stronger my views and opinions on absolutely anything whatsoever in the universe, there's going to be a potential there for someone to upset my apple cart. So if I have to give you an idea, I was in ages ago, say roughly about 12 months back. We were in town. We were running around all afternoon, so we stopped in. You know, we a little bit of frivolity. We went to Dome for coffee, and there was a very nice young African couple having coffee together. You know, you could see they were just almost either newlyweds or boyfriend girlfriend. Very nice ambience between them, and they were just talking quietly, you know, with each other. And there was a family of what would you call them? These people, not rednecks. So the people who live in the more poor to working class suburbs of Perth, you know, what's the word to describe that? Bogans, exactly. Family of bogans. But I can only speak for one person, because you know the rest of the family are okay. But the oldest male there, because there was young some young kids as well, but the father, it looked like the father, and he was wearing his, you know, he's a big guy wearing a flannelette shirt, just looked like, you know, one of these country hit rednecks from out the back of Whoop Whoop, and he was glaring at this young couple, you know, very nice young couple. You could see good people. You know, you only had to look at them to know that they were a very nice young couple, probably starting off together in life. And this guy was glaring at them, and I thought, you go over there, and I'll go over there, and I'll ring the police straight away, or I'll get the staff to ring the police, and then we'll get them to talk to you. You know, nothing would have happened, but you get this kind of, it's almost like this underlying resentment, and I wouldn't say maybe even a little bit of anger, even hate. You know, you get people from, say, some of the African states, and I've chit-chatted with with Uber and around about, and they're very, very nice people. But then you get these sort of like more like bogan redneck type characters, and some of these people they hate these people, even though they've never harmed them. And some of these people from the African states, they've come from worn torn. What would you call it? War-torn, like battle zones, you know, with guerrilla warfare just going on, all around them. So they come to this country, and they're very pleasant, and they're even socially they're friendly, and they smile like any decent human being would. And I thought they're a great addition to the communities in Perth, you know. But naturally, some people may not like them. They don't like the skin colour. They don't like where they come from, you know. All this kind of nonsense. So you see very clearly, you know, you've got almost like a racist undertone. But the thing is, with the individual, you're looking at a conditioning process, person who's quite attached to their views. But one thing I see, for example, with my mother's nursing facility, there's a lot of... the vast majority of the female staff are Asian, and they've got quite a number of girls from the, or women, you know, say women from the African states. working there, and they're quite, they're friendly and sociable, and they're, the vast majority, especially with the management, the nursing staff, very good people, persons. You know, they can get along with almost anyone. So you're looking at with personality, that kind of flexibility, where they don't necessarily, because they're mixing with so many different types, even though they're projecting their core personality, they're very accommodating, very spacious. They tend to like people. They haven't got this kind of racist, discriminative kind of mentality. So it's like that kind of people person, where they're not so quick to judge others, and it's an indication of just how free the mind is. Because if I'm a bigot and a racist, that's just a basis for me to suffer and hate and feel anger towards some people who are completely innocent and won't harm me till the day I leave this earth. So it's a really nonsensical. It's a bit of a. It just doesn't make any sense whatsoever to have like really strong views on people that you don't even know. And so, but in a sense, the personality view, the strong sense of self, will always get you into trouble eventually. It's in a broad sense, because things won't go your way. As we see, life is constantly changing around us, and we're meeting different people, different environments, and all sorts of a number of things happening. And if you think you can control absolutely anything whatsoever, I mean, you're just kidding yourself. You can't even control your own body. You have to eat when you're hungry. You have to go to the bathroom when the need arises. You have to shower every day, look after, maintain, good personal hygiene, grooming, and whatnot. All these things are like necessary. So, that principle where, say, the letting go is the test will be is how attached you are to absolutely anything, whether it's your views and opinions, to certain people, this and that. You can. There's no harm in having attachments if you have a sort of a reasonably, say good perspective. I know people who have very strong attachments to things like it could be something like social work, charity work. But the thing is, and they need things to be done a certain way, with process and whatnot. But the thing is, they get very, very good results. So you can have a situation where a person is very attached to a certain mode of activity or a certain way of doing things, but the results are still wholesome and are still effective. So so it's not to say that that attachment attachment is not a good thing, or is not a conducive thing, because in human society, it may be quite necessary. Throughout human society, we have all these rules and regulations with the government departments, with the tax office, with the banks and pension funds, and all anything you can possibly think of within government bureaucracy and all these minor facilities which are connected with that. So every single one of us have to abide by the social rules and norms, but we still have our personal freedom. So we have to what's the right word? So I wouldn't say toe the line, but we have to approach things from within a certain framework, dynamics, what the government expects of us, what organisations expect of us, what. The people who charge us for our bills for water and there are expectations that we have to meet, and which are quite necessary. Living within human society. But how do I work with it? With the tools. What kind of tools am I going to use with letting go? So when you're looking at the peak level. Things like, you know, the meditation and especially contemplation, it's going to be very difficult for me to let go of anything if I don't really understand myself to a reasonable degree. How can I possibly let something go if I don't understand the process in which it takes place? So what you do, say for example you have a strong attachment, without going into detail, one of our people, one of our community members wants to come to the monastery long term, and his wife, she was just crying profusely, just refused to, she said, you know, just straight out, she will absolutely not let him go. But he knows that he's got this opportunity. The children have grown up, and he really wants to give it his best shot. But she's not ready yet. She's not ready to both to let him go, and she may not be ready for that kind of commitment with the path. But he is. So, but the bottom line is that the letting go, it's really, you know, so your wisdom faculty has to come into play. It has to understand the process from the first time it arises to the time that it subsides, just that same thing. You can't possibly let go of anything, you know, significant if you don't understand what you're going through. And so it's the same thing, you know, it's like I always mention this, you know, with the walking and sitting, do the peaceful meditation and then go straight to wisdom after 5 minutes and explore and understand things, because when you do that, you increase energy and it increases the depth and the quality of the meditation. You know, you don't lose anything at all. You only gain when you do that, when you reflect for maybe 60 seconds or 2 minutes and then go back, you know, you'll actually see it. You'll see an increase in energy depth with the meditation when you move back and forth like this. But, there can be things like renunciation. Say, for example, if I'm attached to, you know, like many, it could be material things. You know, you can make an effort to renounce it. Say, for example, you've got a kuti like full of stuff, you've got a house full of stuff, that, you know, you can maybe just every day, just one item per day. It could be a pen, it could be it could be anything. It could be a piece of paper, it could be a book, like an old book on the shelf. It could be something significant, like an old colour television. You could give it to charity. Renunciation, maybe possibly simplicity, simplifying your life, which can help you with letting go. You know, minimising the amount of duties, responsibilities that you've got to take care of. What else? Simplifying, streamlining things like bank accounts, debit cards. The way you pay your bills, amalgamating things, you know, with payment plans and all the rest. What else? And having the kind of attitude, you know, having a, you know, it's not it's a it's a having a reasonably easy, you know, like an easygoing mentality, not feeling that you have to control everything or things have to be a certain way. You know, it's just not possible. So you just my mentality is just to make the best of what's happening at that particular time, because the experience that you're going to go through can just change from 1 minute to the next. You know, people's moods can change from 1 minute to the next. So nothing is stable, nothing's reliable. And this is why this Anicca principle gives you just a little bit more over time. When you can get months and years, a bit more. Accommodating space in the mind, the ability to accept and not to grab things and push things away. The more lighthearted you are, the more spacious your mind, you're able to move through life. You know, the ups and downs of life with a kind of philosophical calm. In some sense, you know, meditation will give you the real understanding, emotional stability to a degree. But for people in the world who are not Buddhists, who are not meditators, and you see this in elderly people, that they just don't get completely traumatized when things go wrong, because, you know, they're 70, 80, 90 years of age, they've seen it all. You know, some of these people, half of them have done it all. They've been all, you know, they've travelled, they've done this and done that. You know, their mortgage and all the rest of it. And they, you know, they've got this kind of stability. It's almost like a, just like watching on, you know, watching, just, you know, living their life and watching on and just watching things move and change. People coming in and out of their lives. So, you know, they, it's like you, over time, over years, over many years, you just don't go to extremes. You don't jump up and down and start screaming when something terrible happens, and then, or if something really, really good happens, you don't completely lose yourself in happiness and joy. You know, you see elderly people, they've got this it's almost, you know, it's like, which comes through age and experience, it's like a mild detachment. They just don't get blown away the way that young people do when you're looking at extremes of both happiness and pain on any level you can possibly think of. Okay, so better do some metta meditation. We've got to finish by 15, huh? 2:15. Yeah, no, what are we looking at? Okay, 2:15. Yeah, we can't go past 2:15. All right, we'll do a quick one. All right. So what I want you to do is I want you to focus on a very specific area of your life. You know, something that, you know, say for, you know, you're being like your own coach, your own life coach, and, you know, look at a particular area that you might be slightly, what would you say, like, I wouldn't say weak, slightly, well, you need a boost, you know, a particular area of yourself, your personality, which needs a bit of a boost, which needs some positivity, some support. It could be something like, say, for example, if I'm a fearful, I could be a shy, fearful person, lacking confidence. I could say something like loving kindness, compassion. May I be confident? May I be confident, fearless, and at ease with the people around me. So, you know, as an example, so you can design the formulation of your choice, and we use both, like loving kindness, compassion together. Well wishing, and so just choose the words which are suitable for you. And we'll do, let's see, we'll probably spend, because we, let's see, 15, or maybe we'll do 4 or 5 areas, or 3, 14. All right, roughly a couple of minutes each maximum. So choose that area and give yourself a boost. May I be such and such. And just do it slowly, mentally, slowly, and continually, in a very, very relaxed way. And now I want you to choose your best friend. And whatever good things, whatever good qualities you wish for that person, may my best friend be such and such, rich, wealthy, healthy, fortunate. Whatever you think is good for that person, may my friend be such and such, and do that for the next 2 minutes. Now, I want you to choose a neutral person, a person that you have neutral feelings towards. Could be just an associate at work, someone you know in passing, and whatever good qualities, good fortune you wish for them, just adjust the formulation. May that particular person, that neutral person, be such and such. Could be like opportunities. Good health, could be absolutely anything which you think is important for them. Okay, so now I want you to choose a person that you don't particularly get along with. They don't have to be an enemy, just a person that you have differences with, you know, don't get along so well. And then whatever good qualities you wish for that person, just adjust the formulation accordingly. You guys have anything incredible to say before we head off and do our chores and bits and pieces? No trouble at all. It's been a ball. Now it's been great. I mean, the weather's been fantastic, and I quite enjoyed it. I'm glad. Again, as long as you guys get something out of it, that's the main thing. We've got fantastic facilities here, support, and the crew, the kitchen crew, and people helping to organise and clean. So it's all it's pretty fantastic dynamics overall. Thank Tom and Di and all the guys who were helping out. It's fantastic, fantastic job. Okay, is there anything you guys, Tom and Di, want to say before we head off? Anything we need to say before we split?
Happy Mother's Day.
Yeah, I'll give my mother a ring.